You're listening to SBS On The Money with Ricardo Gonçalves.
It's your daily 10-minute business and finance news wrap for this Tuesday, the 30th of April, 2024. The Australian share market rose today by 0.4%. We'll get the details with Elise Mackay from Pendal Group. But first, to budget airline Bonza, which has entered voluntary administration 15 months after it started servicing regional destinations. It follows the repossession of its fleet after discussions about its ongoing viability. So that leaves Qantas, which owns Jetstar, along with Virgin Australia, and to a lesser extent, Rex in the domestic market. So how many airlines can Australia really sustain? For more, here's aviation analyst Geoffrey Thomas.
Australia has been sustaining two large airline groups for quite some time. Previously, it was Ansett ANA and TAA. Then it was Qantas took over TAA / Australian Airlines. So we had Qantas and Ansett. And then Ansett collapsed and Virgin took over. And we've got Qantas and the Virgin Group with their peripheral entities. So it's essentially two broad groups. And they've served Australia very, very well. I know there's been a lot of publicity about the problems in the last couple of years, but they're really related to the recovery from COVID and shortage of everything, including staff and the ongoing COVID issues. So that's a global issue. But essentially, they're two very good airline groups. So the rule of thumb is a population of 50 million to support one airline. Now, having said that, if the business model for smaller airlines in a smaller population base is sound, then that's fine. Then it'll work. For instance, Alliance Airlines, they're a major contract airline that supplies FIFO contracts. It supplies aircraft to Qantas. Their business model is perfect, small operator, and does exceedingly well. Then you've got the Qantas-Jetstar combination where you've got a low-cost airline and a major airline, again, serving totally different markets and both extremely successful. And it's the same with Virgin. I mean, you know, if it wasn't for COVID, Virgin would have still be with us today as it was. And we have to remember that during COVID, 86 airlines around the world went bankrupt. So certainly are pushing the boundaries with a population of 25 million, but it's also a very wealthy country with huge resource projects, people having to fly long distances to get to work. So it's a different dynamic in Australia. As far as competition and pricing is concerned, Bonza only had about 1% of the market. There's only four airplanes, four 737s. Virgin's got 80. Qantas has got similar number, plus all the wide-bodied aircraft they've got. They're very big operation. Jetstar, huge operation. So the impact is going to be minimal. Certainly some centres will feel it way more than others, the ones that, you know, that Bonza was serving. But hopefully, you know, Virgin and Qantas and Jetstar will see what they've done and hopefully fill the void in some cases, not all, but in some cases they'll fill the void.
Geoffrey Thomas there, a aviation analyst.
Now, Market Day on the SBS On The Money podcast.
To the Australian share market now, which did climb. The S&P ASX 200 up 0.4%, 7,664. For more, I spoke with Elise Mackay, an investment analyst at Pendal Group.
What we're seeing is a bit of a holding gap until we get some insight from what the Fed's going to do, which is currently meeting Tuesday, Wednesday. And then also we're waiting for a bit more of a read on the US earnings over, which will come overnight, particularly with Amazon. So when I look across the market, it's really materials, which is the standout. And there we're really seeing lithium on a bit of a tear. Some of the names are up between 3 and 10% in that space. And that's a combination of a couple of different factors. So firstly, we have the futures prices, which were up 5% overnight. And then you've also had Tesla. So this is really positive for sentiment, Tesla being up 15% overnight, now 35% over 5 days. And that's off the back of a really solid set of earnings and the meeting in China, which went really well.
You mentioned there briefly the US Fed Reserve, the board meeting happening in the next couple of days. What's the market expecting and what are the key implications?
Well, what the market is expecting is very different to where we started at the beginning of the year. So the market originally was looking for six cuts this year. We're now looking for one to two cuts, with messaging off the back of hotter than expected inflation data really shifting to one which is of we don't have the data yet, so let's wait and see. So what are we expecting, or what are we looking for at the Fed meeting? Well, we're not expecting a cut, but we're looking for the commentary. And what will we see in the commentary? Will we see them retain that messaging that the inflation data is continuing to improve, but it's not yet there? Or will we see them move to an even more hawkish point? That's certainly not what we're expecting, but that would be more negative for markets. At the end of the day, though, if you think about why are rates higher, it's because the economy is growing. Inflation isn't yet coming down to the level that we need to cut, but a strong growth environment and steady rates is still not a bad outcome for equity markets.
Retail sales figures are out here in Australia. They're down for the month. What does it say, and how does it reflect the economy?
Yeah, so it's really interesting because this was surprisingly soft and down 0.4% on the month is actually the softest print that we've seen outside of the COVID period and the introduction of GST. So a very soft month for retail sales. And that really reflects a slowing consumer. And what does this mean for the economy? I mean, it will be interesting. We're still seeing inflation, which is proving pretty sticky, but a weakening consumer and wages, which are holding steady but coming down slightly, that should be positive for inflation moving forward. So we still expect the RBA will cut, but it's not likely until the end of the year or potentially even the start of next year.
Coles numbers came out today, Q3 sales up 5.1%. What does this say about the supermarket retailers and the way they're dealing with inflationary pressures at the moment and consumers' spending attitudes at the grocery store?
Yeah, so this actually dovetails in nicely with the retail sales that came out. So whilst the supermarket sales up 5% was a strong result for Coles, some of this was related to Easter timing. Some of it was related to their Pokemon collectibles that came out. So there are a couple of factors that really probably suggested that they gained some share during the period. But if you look at the data on inflation, so they have seen that inflation on food ease from about 3% last quarter to 2% this quarter. And that's two factors that are really driving it. So on the fresh side, you're seeing the deflation that we've seen in the market has started to ease a little bit. That deflation in fresh is now limited to fruit, so specifically apples and avocados. And on the meat side, it's limited to red meats and primarily just lamb. On the package side, the inflation has also eased, but this is from 4% to 3% and should continue to ease further, although we don't expect that will go into a deflationary environment. And then if you think about, well, what does this then mean for the consumer and how it dovetails in with the retail sales data, there are a couple of interesting factors that I saw in the Coles release. So firstly, their value range, so that grew 9% year on year, so their home brand value range. And so I think that's really interesting, suggests that consumers are looking for those cheaper buys. And then their premium private label range, that actually grew 22%. And so they were seeing some trading down from consumers who would normally eat out and looking to consume more premium products at home. So it's also supportive of a softening consumer.
Any other stocks in focus today?
Yeah, so there's Worley. So this is an interesting one. So they came out overnight with one of their largest shareholders, so the Dar Group, which has been on the register now since 2016, 2017, they had a 23.5% stake, and they've done a block trade where they've sold down 19% of their stake. $1.4 billion, that's the largest block that we've seen in a very long time in the Australian market, and it's really a bit of an end of an era. So Dar made an approach and tried to buy, to do a takeover offer for Worley back in 2017. That was rejected. There was a little bit of a, I'd say, contentious relationship there, where they, which eventually resulted in Dar Group gaining a board seat. But then they were never able to develop the strategic relationship with Worley that they were trying to foster. So they've decided to sell down the majority of their position. That was placed at a 12% discount, and the stock's currently trading around down about 7-8%.
And finally, where do you see the opportunities for investors right now?
Okay, so I've been very positive on the outlook for generative AI and specifically what this means for the domestic data center sector. So if I look across the earnings that we saw last week in the US, we saw the likes of Meta, Google and Microsoft come out with CapEx budgets, which equated to about $140 billion US. So this is huge numbers for 2024, and it's up about 50% on what they spent last year. We're expecting Apple and Amazon to also come out with increased CapEx budgets. So we're looking at, for 2024, an overall spend of over $200 billion US, of what the vast majority of that will go into generative AI infrastructure, and of which data centers is a key part of that spend. So I'm really positive on the outlook for companies or data center players which have availability of inventory and a pipeline of opportunities to bring to the market. So this is the likes of NextDC, which is currently in the process of raising $1.3 billion to develop their footprint, Goodman's Group, and then Macquarie Technologies.
That's Elise Mackay there from Pendle Group.
This SBS On The Money podcast is provided for informational purposes only. The content on this podcast should not be understood as constituting advice or a recommendation. It is not personal advice and does not consider your personal circumstances or objectives. You should contact a licensed professional before making any financial decision.